FEMA's deadline to move hurricane evacuees out of emergency shelters was October 15th, last Saturday. The agency rushed during the weekend to find alternative housing, but 2 months after Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, thousands still have nowhere else to go. Of course, many more evacuees have moved on, but where they are and how they're doing is a complicated story. Friends, family, and generous strangers have opened their homes, and FEMA has begun to move evacuees into trailer parks intended to house families for up to 18 months. Hundreds of thousands live in hotels and aboard cruise ships. Most can be found in the states of Louisiana and Texas, but there are some in all 50 states. Just after Katrina, shelters housed more than 270,000 evacuees, and as that just began to decline, Hurricane Rita compounded the problem. But FEMA has still been criticized for the speed and efficiency with which they found or built alternative housing, and many have complained about the cost of placing evacuees in hotels. Though yesterday, FEMA and the Red Cross admitted to the New York Times that they got that number wrong. It's now believed to be 200,000 people, not the 600,000 first reported. And the scale of that mistake suggests that FEMA has limited information about who's where and how much it's all costing. Later in the program, we'll follow Hurricane Wilma's rapid intensification into the most powerful storm on record in the Atlantic Basin, though it's now declined in power just a little bit. But first, if you were displaced by Hurricane Katrina, we'd like to hear from you. Where are you now? How did you find that housing? How are you doing? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest is James McIntyre. We're going to go first to Sharon Adams, Director of Communications for the Joint Hurricane Housing Task Force. The task force helps evacuees find temporary and permanent housing in the area of Houston, Texas. She joined us now by phone from that city, and it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How many evacuees are there in the Houston area?
We are looking at placing 100,000 evacuees into permanent housing. And these are evacuees who have come out of both the mega shelters, such as the Astrodome and the Convention Center, the Red Cross shelters, hotels, private homes, church shelters, et cetera, et cetera.
And is that process going quickly?
It's going in a very orderly fashion, which we're really proud of. As you know, nothing of this magnitude has ever been attempted before. So what we feel like we're doing here in Houston is writing a template for other cities should they have the unfortunate task of having to do the same thing that we're doing right now. So our goals were first to get the people who needed the help the most out of the shelters. Mm-hmm. Living in a shelter with 20,000 other people is not pleasant. So those people were placed in more permanent housing first. Then we emptied the Red Cross shelters. Now we're working on the hotels.
And as you know, there has been some confusion over numbers of late. Are you pretty sure of your numbers? Where are you getting them from?
I'm pretty sure of my numbers, although I have to admit it's a moving target. And the reason for that is because of what I just mentioned, the people we're trying to identify who may be under the radar screen. In other words, they are not staying in the mega shelters, or they are not staying in the Red Cross shelters. They're staying in small church shelters. They're staying with families who've taken them in. They're staying with relatives. And these are the people we're trying to reach now and let them know that there is housing availability. It's time to move on because the funding for hotel occupancy is going to be ending in the near future, and we want to make an orderly transition from hotels to more permanent housing.
And when you do that, are people telling you that they once they find this more permanent housing that, well, they'll probably stay in Houston, or are they just waiting for the opportunity to head back?
A little of both. A lot of people want to stay here, and that's why what we've done is establish what's called a housing choice center. And we're trying to empower these evacuees who've gone through probably what's the worst trauma they've ever experienced and allow them to gain some control over their lives. So instead of saying, you're going to move out of the Astrodome and we're going to place you in apartment X,
right,
we have a housing choice center where they can come and self-select an apartment that may meet their needs. Many of these people are looking for jobs. They have children in schools, And we didn't want to place them in an apartment that may be 50 miles from where their six-year-old is going to kindergarten.
So how long do you think it is going to be before all of this has been churned through?
We are looking at 2 months. And I have to admit...
Two more months is what you're saying.
Pardon?
Two more months. Yes.
And I have to admit that, again, that's a moving target, because as we identify more people... and, of course, as you mentioned, Hurricane Rita came along right on the heels of Katrina.
Right.
So now Rita evacuees are entitled to the same benefits as Katrina evacuees. So we're dealing with another group of people. And that's why it's really hard to quantify the numbers, because sometimes you hear numbers stated in apartment units. Well, how many people are in an apartment unit? Some people mentioned 3.2. Some people mentioned 4. So I prefer to simplify things and just use the number of people we're placing rather than get confusing with units and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Sharon Adams, good luck to you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Sharon Adams, Director of Communications for the Joint Hurricane Housing Task Force, and joined us from Houston, Texas. Let's talk now with James McIntyre. He's a spokesman for FEMA, and he joins us from his office in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
And we need to ask, the deadline, as we mentioned earlier in the program, for getting people out of shelters was Saturday. Some thousands are still there. How come?
First of all, it was never a deadline. It was a goal that was set to try to move people in better housing solutions. Unfortunately, when that goal was set by the president, that goal was set against people who were displaced for Hurricane Katrina. Right prior to landfall for Hurricane Rita, those numbers were down to around 50,000 and were moving fine. But then we had Hurricane Rita make landfall, and those numbers shot back up to 185,000 people.
Mm-hmm. And nevertheless, there are still people who have been living in shelters for almost 2 months now.
And there are still people that will be in shelters, because the people make the choices on where they want to live. We provided various options, including cash assistance awards. More than 419,000 people have received transitional housing assistance. They make the choices on when they leave and where they go. We understand that there are people who are still remaining in the shelters, but those are people who are making the choices to remain in the shelters until there is some type of housing solution near the locations where they came from. But we have to understand that most of those housing stocks in those areas were either severely damaged or destroyed. So it's going to take time for those housing stocks to come back online. So people will have to make some choices.
Let me ask about trailers and mobile homes. As I understand it, the plan called for FEMA to set up 30,000 of these every 2 weeks. Is that on track?
Again, that was a goal. That was not a plan. That was contractors setting a goal, thinking that everything would run smoothly, no other hurricane landfalls. You have to take all of those things into consideration. The mobile housing aspect of this was just one part of our housing solutions. And it was never intended to be the only solution to getting people housed from shelters into transitional solutions.
At least one trailer park owner in Louisiana said he offered his property for trailers to be set up within days of the storm. Negotiations still underway. People are complaining about bureaucratic impediments to...
There is a possibility that that is happening, but you have to realize that FEMA is not an agency that's going to come in and just set trailers down wherever people say. We have to work with the state and local officials to determine where these will be set, and we have to consider the impact that it will have on those communities. And some local communities have determined that the impact was too much. So just because a landowner says that he has the property doesn't necessarily mean that the local officials will accept that property as being one of the choices because of the impact that it will have on its infrastructure.
Let's get callers involved in the conversation. Again, our number is 800-989-8255. Email TOTN at NPR.org. And Diane is calling us from San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Diane. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I came out of New Orleans. We came to San Francisco. And we got to St. Mary's. There was all kind of folks saying, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to help you. Just hold on. Just give us a chance. And nothing's happened. It's been weeks. I'm living in someone's basement. We can't even get Red Cross or FEMA to call us back. We don't have I mean, there is nothing we are getting from the Red Cross. Everyone says they're giving to the Red Cross. We get nothing. Red Cross gave us the $300-some in the beginning and said, get everything you need. And I was saying, but people are bringing clothes in the front door at St. Mary's. There's no room where you're saying, go see if there's anything that fits you. People come and give us clothes. We've got nothing from the Red Cross. I had to raise sand just to get the little bag with toothbrushes in it because they told us to go buy that. And I'm saying, why should we go buy those things when you have them here? And we need to hold on to this little money until we can get settled somewhere. I had to raise sand to get a blanket.
Let me see if I can get a response from James McIntyre. And I know you can't speak for the Red Cross, sir, but no, particularly on the...
I won't try. All I'm going to do is ask the applicant for her name and ask her if...
Nothing. We have gotten no thing.
Ma'am,
I asked for some help. You know what we got? A $20 voucher from the Goodwill.
No. Yeah, hold on. Diane, I think Mr. McIntyre of FEMA is asking for your name so he can inquire into your case and see if he can maybe provide some help.
My name is Diane Evans.
Diane Evans?
Yes.
Conventional spelling?
One more question. Have you registered with FEMA and do you have a case?
Oh, yes, we registered. We did all that.
That's fine.
We've got nothing.
Fine. But what I need you to do, if possible, I will give you a phone number. And you can call that phone number and give me the case number, and then I can track your case.
But there are people, and you need to know this, there are people being evicted from these hotels because the Red Cross is not paying the bill. They're not being told by the Red Cross that we're not going to pay the bill. They're just, when they find out, their stuff's on the street.
Do you want the phone number, Diane? Diane, do you want the phone?
What is the number?
The phone number is 202-465. 5061.
202-465-5061. Okay. And the area code is 202 again. Diane, thank you for the call. Good luck. And we appreciate your talking to us. We'll be back after a short break with more with James McIntyre from FEMA. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington with many of the evacuees from Hurricane Katrina out of shelters, some, though, still waiting to be moved. If you're a Katrina evacuee or Rita evacuee for that matter, we'd like to hear from you. Where are you living now? How did you find your housing? How are you doing? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with James McIntyre, a FEMA spokesman who's joining us from his office in Baton Rouge. Just before the break, you were giving a phone number, and I assume that's for anybody to call with inquiries?
Well, I would rather we just give it to individuals. The people should be calling back to the 800 number to inquire about their cases, special cases like that particular one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would track that myself, but
okay.
That's not a number for broadcast.
Well, it's a little late for that. But let's get another caller on the line. This is Ron. Ron's calling us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thanks.
All right. I just wanted to make a comment. And, I was in New Orleans and when all this took place, and I was relocated to the Buffalo, New York area. And, you know, I guess FEMA wasn't there, you know, to be, you know, as helpful as I would like them to be. But I understand, you know, in defense of them, that there's a lot of people that they're handling cases for at this time. But speaking to Buffalo, New York, I've been treated excellent since I've been here. I've actually, through the news source, they put our story on TV, my wife and my four children, and a landlord in a very nice, affluent area donated an apartment at his apartment complex where I don't even have to pay rent until the anniversary of the Katrina storm. People in this community have come out and given us clothes, given us, you know, we have people. Still to this day, and our story aired almost 2 weeks ago, where people, you know, are going out just buying gift certificates so that we can make sure that we have things for our children for, you know, Christmas and the holidays and things of that nature. And I just wanted to say, you know, it's a difficult situation, but, you know, there are some success stories out there, and I just, and I also, I don't have any regards on returning to the New Orleans area ever. I think I found my new home, and I wanted to tell you that I appreciate you for, you know, broadcasting, you know, both sides of the story, because there are some positive things that are happening with FEMA, and, you know, we just can't point the blame at one agency. You know, we have to collectively, as our citizens, you know, come together with solutions on how we can reform things if they don't work right. And this is a learning experience for all of us, because I'm sure FEMA never in a million years imagined that something to this magnitude would happen, and they would have to go into, you know, Jedi warp speed, you know, to handle this many people. So I do commend them for their efforts, you know, and there is a positive out there as well.
Ron, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Not a problem. Have a great day.
You too. And James McIntyre, we do sometimes forget, as Ron pointed out, that people are doing the best they can in difficult circumstances, and that some people, many people across this country, have been unbelievably generous.
Yeah, and that's true. And, you know, as the previous caller said, there's been more than 1.3 million people that have registered for assistance with FEMA. So there are times when phone lines will be busy, and there are times when you won't be able to get through. But people, you know, can be patient if they can be and just continue to make those calls. Eventually someone will be able to take that call and assist them with their issues.
And even as we're talking about this, is there a goal now of the time when people should be out of hotels as well?
We have not set any goals at all that we're moving people out of hotels. We realized that the housing stock in Louisiana and Mississippi was severely impaired, either destroyed or definitely damaged. And therefore, we have to work with the states and the local officials in replacing that housing stock. And that's going to take time. So what we're trying to do is get people to accept other resolutions for right now, of getting out of shelters and moving into other temporary solutions until they can get back home. Sometimes that may mean leaving the state, but those are options that are available they can take advantage of to get their families into some type of temporary solution until they can return home.
Let's get another caller on. This is Alfred. Alfred calling us from Memphis, Tennessee. Hello, Alfred. Are you there? Hello? Well, Alfred has apparently left us. Or maybe this is my phone's, because this is not working too well. Let me see if I can. Well, let's try get something else on the line. This is Denise. Denise calling us from Cave Creek in Arizona. Can you hear me, Denise?
Yes. Hi. Hello.
Oh, good. The other phone line wasn't working. We're glad we could get you on the air.
I'm with the Greater New Orleans Community Data Center.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a local data intermediary in New Orleans, and we republish basically census long-form data at the neighborhood level for social planning. And I wanted to comment on the availability of good data about New Orleans and everywhere we've gone.
Yes.
And that is that we were counting on the census, really, to give us good information with the American Community Survey coming out. In fact, they have a question that asks where you lived 1 year ago. If you can imagine how rich that information would be for planning going forward.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, in the upcoming budget, the Senate has proposed they're cutting funding for that program with the census. So we're pretty much flying blind in New Orleans with social planning. And also those cities where our citizens have landed, they won't have the information they need to adequately plan or pay for the support for folks who need social services.
So you're having difficulty collecting the data you need to figure out the scale of the problem? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. In fact, data experts I've talked to who worked in Iraq and the rebuilding effort there said it was easier to get information about Iraq than it is New Orleans.
I think that might be debatable, but we'll have to see, Denise. I wonder, James McIntyre, FEMA has been having some difficulty calculating the numbers as well. And again, this is a reflection of the scale of the problem.
Actually, the numbers you're talking about are not FEMA numbers.
I'm not talking about Denise's numbers. I'm talking about other numbers.
Yes, the Red Cross hotel numbers you're talking about.
Yes, indeed.
Those are not FEMA numbers. Those are Red Cross numbers. We depend on the Red Cross to register the people that they assist in shelters and in hotels. Those numbers are not numbers we're counting. They had a firm that was doing the count for them.
And that firm obviously got it wrong. FEMA did pass along the information, though.
FEMA passed along the information that we depend on another agency to provide us because they're the ones that have direct contact with the evacuees. You're correct in that. But you have to understand that all of this is a partnership, and one agency is not doing this alone, and we have to work as a team to do that. Now, for our counts, for any type of assistance, we have exact counts because we take registrations and our registrations are in our database, and we have exact counts for the number of people who have registered for assistance and the number of people we assist. That is not based on any Red Cross numbers.
Denise, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it, and good luck.
Thanks.
And James McIntyre, we know you're extremely busy. Obviously, things are that's a crucial job that you're doing. We appreciate you taking the time today, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
James McIntyre is a spokesman for FEMA, and he joined us by phone from his office in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Vernon Jones is CEO of DeKalb County in Georgia. Jones and his administration opened up a hurricane relief center outside Atlanta to accommodate numbers of evacuees who arrived there. He joins us now by phone from East Atlanta. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Getting back to this number of questions, this question of numbers, rather, I understand there's a discrepancy over the number of evacuees in your county.
Well, let me tell you, first of all, I'm not here to bash FEMA or bash the Red Cross. I do want to point out, however, some realities. And realities are there was no appropriate tracking mechanism in place. We're operating now in an era of technology, an environment of technology, information technology. It's very simple to create databases, to merge databases, to cross-reference databases. We opened up what you call probably, which was the model, that a lot of people have looked at. This super model agency we created had every available resource underneath one roof, from registering someone with FEMA, with operators there keying in the information for FEMA, to enrolling children in schools, human resources recruiting people for job opportunities. We had a postal service to set up P.O. boxes because many of the victims did not have a forwarding address. We were able to establish that, had public health there that was providing medical examinations. We had an entire operation, and that's why we called it our disaster relief center. One-stop shopping was the concept. And when I saw, and Red Cross was a part of it, we had some challenges with the Red Cross, being unorganized, not carefully planning, lack of organizational skills, lack of technology to get information from these victims, and to be able to track that information appropriately. And when you look at the numbers, we have our numbers. We have hardcore numbers. We serve over 26,000 families. But, for example, housing, we put in 2,600 families in housing, both public and private housing, which equates to about 8,000 people. We registered over 1,700 in our school system. We have good hardcore numbers. I think the challenge is, you know, when you look at the Red Cross and FEMA, you can't put it all on FEMA, although I think they certainly need to put in some control mechanisms, new technology. But the Red Cross, for example, they've been sanctioned by Congress since 1905 to be an additional assistance in the event of an emergency or a disaster. They receive about $4 of every $5 given. The president gets on TV, give to the Red Cross, news, media, operations. They do the phone-a-thons to raise money for the Red Cross. But you can't take an organization that's responsible for responding to a disaster, a nonprofit organization, that has about 1% when you respond to a disaster, 1% of Red Cross true personnel versus 99% of volunteers. I applaud and appreciate the volunteers. Those volunteers are responding, but they have to be managed. There's a problem, in my opinion, with the Red Cross's management. They have unlimited resources. For example, why in this day and time, when an evacuee or a victim comes in, there's a manual process, sit down and complete this application? Why can't that information be keyed in immediately, tracked, put into a database? You take that database and the database from FEMA, you cross-reference them to see who received what services. It's very simple. This is a management issue. I think they raised close to $1 billion already. The interest on that alone, just the interest, maybe a couple of days, can pay for a system. It's about processes. They can pay for an information system that can get information, cross-reference that information, disperse that information, and to have the accurate numbers. So I'm just surprised as a manager of county government, and let me tell you, and having a background in information technology, there's no excuse. What is FEMA right now, what is the Red Cross doing right now to create the type of infrastructure, the technology infrastructure, to be better prepared? What is the actual background and experience of the CEO of the Red Cross? They spend 99% of their time raising money, 1% responding to disasters. What is that person's background? Don't only question the background of the FEMA director. What is the background of the Red Cross director? Has anyone ever been able to talk with anyone in management or on the operations side and ask those hard questions? We're talking to spinmeisters, media people from the Red Cross. It's not fair to put it all on FEMA. Red Cross shares some of this responsibility, a lot of it primarily because of what Congress did in 1905, and that would sanction them to be that provider. And we had an issue with the Red Cross, been totally unorganized, and they were replaced by the Salvation Army. Immediately, much more organized, went the extra mile. I heard the lady, I think earlier, her name was Diana, about
right.
The Red Cross not responding. That has been true all over. I know there are some success stories. But when they say, well, we served 130, we spent $130 million in reimbursements, and we saw some 500,000 people. Well, if you were better managed, you would have doubled or tripled those numbers. You would not have had the long lines. You would not have had the chaos. And so what my question, and that's why there certainly need to be hearings, in my opinion, with the Red Cross. What are they doing? They're the designated organization. You've got a nonprofit organization, and you put them in place as infrastructure that's 99% volunteer-based to respond to a disaster. If the government can't respond appropriate to a disaster, how do you expect an organization that's 1% personnel-based with 99% volunteers to respond to an emergency? You can't do it.
Vernon Jones, we appreciate your time today. It's an interesting point. Thank you very much for being with us. Vernon Jones, CEO of DeKalb County in Georgia, and he joined us from east of Atlanta in Georgia. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I think Alfred is back with us on the line from Memphis, Tennessee. Alfred, are you there?
Yes, sir.
I apologize for the phone difficulties earlier.
Okay.
You're on the air. Go ahead and make your point.
Okay. I'm from New Orleans. I was trying to relocate back to New Orleans. I left New Orleans with my school bus with about 35 people. They all been placed in different cities all over the country. And I'm in Memphis now trying to find housing. Red Cross has placed us in the hotel. I'm grateful for that. But I would like to go back to New Orleans and try to get work in the New Orleans area. I want to be a part of the rebuilding process. I would like to get a trailer placed on my property in New Orleans. My home was flooded, but I have a driveway where I normally park my bus. I can put a trailer there and to try and, you know, I want to be a part of the rebuilding of New Orleans.
And are you getting any help to do that?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Like I say, I traveled down from Alexandria, Louisiana to, that's where I evacuated to.
Right.
And I tried to go back to New Orleans to find housing and school for my daughter, but I was unsuccessful in getting housing in the greater New Orleans area.
Mm-hmm.
I know in New Orleans itself it was, you know, destroyed, but in the surrounding areas. And even with the trailer program, I was unsuccessful in trying to do that.
And now I assume your daughter's in school there in Memphis?
No, she's not in school yet because we can't, the school system won't allow us to place her in school with a hotel address.
Really?
So we need to get a home. We need to find somewhere to stay to get her in school. She's been out of school now almost a month.
And the school year is going on. What grade is she in?
She's in sixth grade.
That's an important year. Well, good luck to you, Alfred. I'm not sure where to go turn to for help, but I know that they're trying to, again, FEMA's trying to place these mobile homes, but I think they're trying to put them in parks outside of New Orleans, not inside the city itself.
Right, I understand. Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Well, good luck, and I hope your daughter gets into school soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get a quick line in from Mary. Mary calling from Oxford, Mississippi.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm actually on a car phone in Pontotoc, Mississippi, but I'm
safely pulled off to the side. I wanted to say that we have new friends that are from New Orleans who evacuated from New Orleans to Oxford because a brother who was a graduate student at the University of Mississippi. And that's where we live, and we put a notice up on the bulletin board at the Red Cross Center that our house was available and our church had a space available for a family to live in. So I got a call from this young family.
Mary, we're up against a break. Can I ask you to stay on hold for a minute? We'll resume talking to you after the break.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I hope your battery on your phone holds out. We're going to be back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Ford Foundation, announcing winners of the Leadership for a Changing World Awards, honoring people, inspiring change. Online at fordfound.org. From the California Endowment, working to improve both the health and the health care of California's communities. At the California Endowment, community matters. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The U.S. Poet Laureate Ted Kooser says on a good day, writing brings an adrenaline rush.
And that's the fun of it, you know, sitting there writing, and all of a sudden something just flies in from the side, and you think, holy, did I just write that? Of course, it may look pretty stupid in 24 hours, but at the time you think, boy, this is really neat.
A visit with poet Ted Kooser at home in Nebraska, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today we're talking about housing the evacuees of Hurricane Katrina. Many have been moved from shelters to more permanent housing around the country. If you've resettled after Hurricane Katrina, we want to hear from you. Still on the line with us from Mississippi is Mary. And Mary, before the story, I wanted to ask you, have you gotten the help that you expected, that you deserved from agencies like the Red Cross?
Well, actually, it's not myself. It's our guests from New Orleans who are here. They evacuated before the storm hit New Orleans, and they drove to Oxford in their SUV because they had the mother has a brother who's a student at the University of Mississippi.
I see.
And they were immediately taken care of and put into a hotel. We had offered our home, but they stayed in a hotel, Motel 8, I think, for 7 weeks. And just yesterday, I saw their new apartment. They have a 6 month all paid voucher for a new two-bedroom apartment, two-bedroom, two-bath. That was delayed only a little because it's it's normally an apartment complex for elderly people.
So it looks as if in their case things worked out pretty well.
I think they worked out very well. They moved into this elderly housing because the grandmother and step grandfather who came with them are there, and they wanted to be close to the grandparents.
I see.
And I did want to comment, I volunteered only for one day with the Red Cross because that's all that they needed me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But someone had commented that the manual recording system to keep track of the records for Red Cross wasn't highly computerized, and it was explained to me that their system has to be ready to be set up in an environment where there's no power at all. And we were in a vacant Walmart space, and we did have power, but the manual system with carbon copies and so forth, so it seems kind of archaic.
Yeah, it does.
Be able to go wherever they're needed, and they can't count on having power and laptop computers and everything.
Well, Mary, thanks very much for that. We appreciate the phone call.
Sure.
And good luck. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Some people displaced by Hurricane Katrina are finding that differences in housing costs around the country are obstacles to settling into new communities. San Diego, California, which has one of the hottest housing markets in the country, is one example. The Reverend Eric Miller is executive director of St. Stephen's Interdenominational Alliance in San Diego. He's with us by phone from the True Vine Missionary Baptist Church there. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
How much of a challenge is the housing cost there in San Diego for evacuees?
Well, the housing cost is not the issue as much as the rental cost. And that is, Neil, that what's happening, the landlords and property owners have lowered their costs in order that they might just pay their mortgage fees on their properties, but at the same time offer their property to these that have a need.
Mm-hmm.
They've lowered it considerably in comparison to what the normal rate is for renter.
Yeah, the market rate, yeah.
The market rate, yes.
But that's still too much for many evacuees?
It can be because they're coming from the Gulf areas where rent is considerably a lot lower.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that maybe they're in New Orleans area, $700 might be extremely high, where that's extremely low here in San Diego.
And how many evacuees are there in San Diego? Do you know?
Well, I had a guesstimate at first when we first had thoughts about this, but we've come to find out that it's a total of 2,517 that has been assessed being registered here, and that's registering through the Red Cross. There's out of that 2,517, you have some 1,200 families that are here, and so we're talking about between 7 to 8 in a family as a norm, as low as 4, but as high as 8 people that's having small siblings.
Yeah, and are people being able to find work?
Young people that have that many kids in their families.
Right.
So what we find extremely unique is that they've been able to stay together, and we try to get them into apartments that, if not apartment homes, in which they can live for a period of time until they can get back up on their feet.
And I was just asking if the adults there have been able to find work.
Yes, they have. Now they've taken minimal wage jobs out here, but they've taken jobs so that they are not totally dependent and won't have to wait as long, because sometimes there's a waiting period between what Red Cross can do and what FEMA can do.
Right. Now, we've been hearing a lot about delays like that. I understand that there are still a lot of people there in San Diego living in motels. Is that a function of this this price of apartments and price of houses?
Well, no, it's because of mostly their indecisiveness about staying or going back to where they're from, especially those from Louisiana. They're very faithful to the areas in which they've come from, and most of them really look to go back. If they do decide to stay, it's because they've had an opportunity to either be told or they've seen firsthand that there's nothing to go back to.
Reverend Miller, thanks very much, and good luck to to you personally and to all of the people you're trying to help there.
Thank you.
Reverend Eric Miller is Executive Director of St. Stephen's Interdenominational Alliance in San Diego and was with us by phone from the True Vine Missionary Baptist Church.